Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
The Mission Watch Live, another Messiah's Branch national satellite radio program. We are broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is November 13, 2014. If you need help with anything after this program, please call me. If you need a prayer, you can call for that also. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682. In emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. And for the record, folks, if you're one of the 15% of the people out there that do not use the Internet, then any questions that you might have, you don't have to email me. You don't have to go online to do it. You can simply call me at one of those two numbers and ask me a question that you need, because I realize a lot of you folks are listening on satellite and so on and so forth. So please feel free to use the phone for questions. You can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, and our mailing address at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. Prophecyhour.com is a blog that's set up as a hub for all our ministries, like this program is Mission Watch Live. You can find radio archives for that. You can find the latest and breaking news. You can find all these things over there at prophecyhour.com. I'd mention also that prophecyhour.com is very smartphone friendly, as we realize that at least 50% of the people that listen to radio nowadays are listening to it where? On your smartphone. So it's smartphone friendly, so go over there and have a look. Also, our radio program archives have apps for Google Play and so on and so forth, and Apple, that you can find and pick up over there to listen to radio on. Anyway, I also challenge you to share this program with two or three other people. Now, we have a real important subject tonight, but first we're going to say a prayer, as always, and then we'll bring in tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor my guest will. But please, just give everybody out there ears in which to hear the truth. We turn the program over to you. Amen and amen. Well, tonight we're going to talk about, or this afternoon, whichever, depends on what part of the country you're in, we're going to talk about a book called Gun Control and the Third Reich, Disarming the Jews and the Enemies of the State. The book is by Stephen Holbrook. He's a lawyer who's argued in three cases before the United States Supreme Court. He's well known for his involvement in the Second Amendment and gun control litigation. In an interview in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Hal Brooks said that he decided to research the topic because nobody has ever researched it. Well, that's interesting. We're going to ask him about that. Stephen is a research fellow at the Independent Institute. He has taught legal, political, at George Mason University, Howard University, Tuskegee Institute, and he received his J.D. from Georgetown University Law Center and Ph.D. in philosophy from Florida State University. He is the winner of three cases before the United States Supreme Court, a contributor to numerous scholarly volumes. He is the author of the books Gun Control and the Third Reich, The Founders, Second Amendment Origins of the Right to Bear Arms, That Every Man Be Armed, Evolution of a Constitutional Right, The Right to Bear Arms, Securing Civil Rights. Let's just welcome him now and get him in here. His credentials actually go a mile long. So welcome, Stephen. Are you there with me?
Yes, I am, Pastor. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I educated myself by one with your book, and I also looked at a couple of your video clips where you've been on other programs, so I kind of know where you're coming from. But let's start with this. There's so many books written about the Holocaust. Why would, for our listeners, why is this book different, and why did you write it?
Well, the strange thing is that this was an aspect of the history of Nazi Germany, the repression of the German people, and of the Holocaust that nobody had ever written anything about. There's thousands of books on the origins and demise of Nazi Germany, but they don't mention the fact that the Nazis were very emphatic on disarming their political enemies, disarming the Jewish people before they took draconian action against them, before they engaged in repressive action and brought them to boot. So we have gun control laws passed in the Weimar Republic in the 1920s, licensing and registration. So you had a whole body of records on lawful gun owners. And when the Nazis came to power in 1933, they immediately used these records to look up anybody who might not be politically reliable. That was the term they used, and that would be members of any other political party besides their own. The Social Democrats were a primary example. Their gun licenses were canceled. Their guns were confiscated. Many of them were put in prisons and concentration camps. And gradually, as time went on, and just in 1933 alone, all competing political parties were abolished. The whole society started to be taken in under this dictatorship. And when we fast forward for 5 years to 1938, in the weeks preceding the Night of the Broken Glass, the horrible attacks against the Jewish community, Jews were ordered to turn in their guns. And, of course, the Nazis knew who had them because of their registration records. So that's what's unique about the book. There's no mention of this history in any of the books on Nazi Germany. And so I think it's quite a contribution in that regard. Disarming people was extremely important to the Nazis to achieve their dictatorship, and that's the void in historical scholarship that this book fills.
Right. Let's backtrack a minute. So when they first started gun registration, was it, you know, innocent, or was it with a political motivation in mind?
Well, it was enacted by the Weimar Republic in the 1920s. First, there was a lot of violence in the streets after the Great War between the communists and the Nazis and by the communists and the Nazis against the Republic. And so the right idea occurred to some people that why don't we require strict licensing of gun owners? And that was the law passed in 1928, did that, and then in 1931, they passed registration laws allowing the confiscation of guns. But they did warn that these records should not fall into the wrong hands, the hands of radical elements. The gun debate was the same then as now. A lot of people said, well, you're just going to require all these restrictions to be imposed on law-abiding people, and the commies and the Nazis aren't going to go by any of this. And the ironic part was, of course, they had warned, don't let the records fall into the wrong hands, and the wrong hands took power in 1933, just 2 years after the registration was decreed. And they immediately misused those records for nefarious purposes, to basically disarm everybody they disagreed with.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing book. Let's go with this. So, you know, that would go to say that, you know, a well-meaning law in one person's hand could be that just well-meaning, but change of leadership makes it a very dangerous tool.
That's exactly right. And I don't really disparage the motives of those who passed these laws in the sense that they really did want to prevent violence that was going on. The shift said it was a panacea that had no chance of working. These kinds of laws, they're obeyed by people who are law-abiding only. They're not obeyed by other people. And it's just a fantasy to think that you can decree these restrictions on good, innocent people and somehow the bad things that criminals are doing, terrorists or whoever, that will be prevented by these laws.
Yeah, it's sad that people still seem to think that way because, you know, clearly, just like an old bumper sticker I seen, it must have been 20 years ago I saw it. It said if guns were outlawed, only outlaws would have guns. Well, of course, you know, outlawing guns would not, whether it's in the United States or where it is at, would not stop the criminal element, of course, right?
That's what we're faced with, of course, with our current controversy on gun control in this country. On the one hand, you have those arguing that why don't we just restrict law-abiding citizens even more? Let's make it a felony to possess certain kinds of guns that are actually very normal in our society. Let's put people in prison who have these guns as opposed to doing something about why don't we put the criminals behind bars for life? Why don't we do something about mental illness? We have so much to be done in that regard. These shootings that we've had are by people who were known to be dangerous to other people. Their psychiatrists knew all about it beforehand, or other people who did not step forward, did not come forward and do anything about it. So those kind of people, if they're not taken out of society, they will continue to create harm and havoc. But pass laws that just apply and are obeyed only by law-abiding people doesn't do anything but to make criminals out of law-abiding people.
Right, absolutely. We don't need that. You know, recently they passed a law, I'm sure it passed, in California, where that if you were had somebody that was a relative, somebody close to you that you thought something was wrong with, you could turn them in and they would take their guns. Do you believe that's a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, it depends. That comes under what really amounts to denunciations, where you have the ability of one relative to denounce another. You do have great potential for harm in the sense of, I want to get rid of that person, I want that person's assets, or I just don't like them. And to have their gun seized without due process, that's another problem. It's one thing if a person gets committed to a mental institution. That's been the law universally for a long time, that if they're a danger to themselves or others, they shouldn't have guns. And they should receive treatment. But just in terms of allowing some kind of denunciation to take place and to take a person's guns to deprive them of other rights, maybe even to incarcerate them, that goes way too far. But that's typical of what comes out of California. You've got some of the most restrictive laws in the country. And, you know, it's a felony to just turn around in that state just about. It's a nanny state. I mean, there's warnings everywhere. You go into a restaurant, there's a sign out front saying that if you eat the food, it'll kill you. So they're overregulated in many, many ways. You know, extension cords. Have you ever noticed the tags on extension cords that California's determined these cause cancer?
No, but I'm reluctant to say it, but I was born in California. My mother, though, and father chose to bring me to Kansas when I was a very young child. I went back there once when I was about 20, and I spent about a week. I couldn't take it. But yeah, it's California is just a different place entirely, completely. But having said that, so, you know, that one law, though, is a good example of a law that has two sides of the coin. In one side, the law could be good, but if you flip it over on the other side in the wrong person's hands, it could be very dangerous, as in this case.
Well, every state has procedures to do mental commitments for people who are a danger to themselves or others. And by and large, they have due process rights. You get an attorney. There's a hearing. So you get notice of what's going to happen and an opportunity to be heard. But my impression of the California law is that it's done on the basis of hearsay, unverified allegations, things like that. And that's why it goes too far.
That's really dangerous. If you can't prove it, it's just like here in the state of Kansas. So if I think that somebody in my family or somebody that I know is you know, going to hurt themselves, commit suicide, I can actually have them picked up and, you know, they'll go be evaluated over 72 hours, and then he gets to appear in court and say why he, you know, if he's all right or not, you know what I mean? And then I would have to provide evidence. There would be a kind of a, like a mini trial. But, and that should, those things should happen to protect ourselves. But just to be able to do it over here, say evidence is just regardlessly stupid. Let me ask you this for the people. You mentioned the night of the broken glass. There's a lot of people out there that don't know what that means. What do you mean by that?
And when the Nazis came to power, they, of course, were anti-Semitic. They hated the Jews. They wanted to take their assets. They basically wanted to do an economic redistribution. So gradually, as the 30s wore on, you had more and more repressive measures against the Jews. And they came to a head in the fall of 1938 when the Nazis... The police sent out commands to Jewish people to turn in their guns. That was around September or October 1938. And then on the night of November the 9th to the 10th, these hordes of brown shirt thugs, Nazi thugs, attacked Jewish people in their homes. They ransacked homes, terrorized people. They broke the glass of businesses and vandalized the businesses, and they burned down a lot of synagogues. This was called the Night of the Broken Glass, or Kristallnacht in German. And that was a very violent action. 20,000 Jewish men were put in concentration camps. And the regime's horrible nature was revealed for the entire world to see. It was widely reported here in the United States, what happened, and then Heinrich Himmler, who was the head of the SS, the repressive police apparatus, decreed that any Jew caught with a gun would receive 20 years in a concentration camp. And so had the war not come, that meant that a Jewish man with a gun could have been incarcerated from 1938 to 1958, as incredible as that seems.
That is incredible. For the record, would the Holocaust have happened or been as easy if they hadn't had gun control?
The Holocaust, the repression of Germans who opposed the Nazis, all of those things were made easier by the fact that there were very restrictive gun laws. The gun laws revealed who had the guns, and therefore the Nazis were able to seize them, to confiscate them, and to make sure that nobody who might resist them would have any. We don't know what would have happened had they not had the ability to engage in that specific type of repression. Things might have been very bad anyway, but it might have been alleviated somewhat. Maybe there could have been an armed partisan movement against the Nazis by German people. Maybe some Jews could have resisted. They did so in Warsaw, Poland in 1943 in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Just a few Jewish individuals were able to get a small number of handguns, use those guns against the Germans to get more guns, and they stopped the deportations to the death camps for a number of days. Many of them escaped and were able to continue fighting as partisans in the forest. So that's an example. In fact, the Nazi propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, said, this is what can happen when the Jews have guns in their hands. And he was correct about that, and that's exactly why the Nazis were so repressive in enforcing these gun restrictions before they moved in for the kill.
Right. Well, I'm thankful that we have the right to keep and bear arms according to the Constitution. Not everybody agrees that that's private gun ownership, but I believe that it's there just so we don't have too strong a government. Is that, what do you think?
Well, the Second Amendment protects the right of the people to keep and bear arms. And it says the people, by the way, just like free speech is accorded to the people, or the right against unreasonable search and seizure is guaranteed to the people. It was a fraudulent argument to make up that did not apply to individuals. In the 1960s, the doctrine was made up that only states can maintain militias, and that's the only thing that the Second Amendment had anything to do with. Now, that viewpoint has now been done away with by the 5-4 Supreme Court decision in District of Columbia versus Heller. So it's clear that the Supreme Court understands the Second Amendment to protect individual rights. That's not what the Germans had. They did not have a tradition like that. I mean, in our country, people basically have always understood, the people at large have always understood the Second Amendment to protect individual rights. And we've had a very robust gun-owning public in this country. Half the households have guns in them. That tradition did not exist in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, amen. Folks, this book is called Gun Control in the Third Reich, Disarming the Jews and Enemies of the State. I really appreciate that you wrote this book. It's a different look, like you say. I read a lot of books on the Holocaust. I haven't seen this kind of research. It's well done, and it's well put forth that anybody can understand it. So I appreciate it. I hope the book does well, and maybe you'll come back again one of these days. Anyway, thanks for being on with me.
You're quite welcome, Pastor. Thank you for having me.
Say, do you have a website for this book?
StephenHallbrook.com, StephenHallbrook. But you can just Google my name, Stephen Hallbrook, Gun Control in the Third Reich. You can get the book from Amazon or any number of Internet sites.
Right. Amen. Well, folks, I'll make sure I look it up and put a link where the archives are on this. But, again, thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you for being on, brother. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Well, folks, Gun Control, that was Stephen Hallbrook, Gun Control in the Third Reich. He took his time out to stop in with us and tell us a little bit about this book. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree or whether you like Jews or dislike Jews. It is a very well thought out and read book that you should read to see what would happen if gun control was initiated in the country, in registration. Period. That's what it started with, gun registration, where they knew everybody that had guns. You know, there could have been a different outcome. More people could have been saved. We don't know. But we can see the results of it from this book. So it doesn't matter whether you like Jews, dislike Jews, or not. Anyway, we'll be back in 3 minutes with something great in the second half.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
Countries have denied Internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people. Your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com. Or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
We're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch Live on the American Voice Radio Network. Folks, please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us. And, you know, right now what I need to talk to you about is the mission church for a moment. November is, you know, we love November, you know, the weather, the leaves have changed, and, you know, the weather changed, and, you know, here comes Thanksgiving. And so, I don't know about you folks, but Thanksgiving with me when I was growing up, even while, it was one of my favorite holidays. Because why? Thanksgiving's about family. You know, you go to Thanksgiving and grandma and grandpa's, you know, and you have turkey dinner, and you have all the relatives from all over, you know, somewhere. You might have some weird uncle, you know, there's one of those in every family, right? The weird uncle or the weird relative that does stupid things. And, you know, you have all these different people, and you converge, and you talk, and you love each other, and, you know, maybe play some football or watch some football or something. But, you know, it's a family time. You stuff yourself, and then you kick back, and a lot of times fall asleep, which, by the way, there is a chemical that turkeys puts out that makes you do that. But anyway, point being is, it's all about family. Well, when we started the Mission Church 15 years ago, we came up upon Thanksgiving time, and people were asking, you know, were you going to be open Thanksgiving? And yeah, there was, you know, we thought about it, and there was a lot of places that, and there still are, a lot of places they open up for dinner, and you can go down there, and you're just rushed right through, you know, you go through a line, you get your turkey dinner, you sit down, you eat, and you're gone. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing that people can get a free meal like that on Thanksgiving. But most of those meals are done, believe it or not, the day before Thanksgiving. You know, some of them are even done a couple of days to a week before in Wichita on Thanksgiving, because people are doing that. They're being home with their families on Thanksgiving. Well, we decided that the reason that people come to us anyway is because of love and are treated as family. So why wouldn't we give them what they're missing, a family-type Thanksgiving? And that's what we do. At Thanksgiving time, we open our doors and we let them watch football, you know, because that's what 90% of them want to do. So we turn on the game, and everybody gets to eat, and it's a relaxed atmosphere. You know, most of the homeless and poor call us mom and dad anyway, you know. And so we give them an atmosphere of family and of love. And so during that period of time that they can forget about their problems and their pain for a little while, I mean, to ease their burdens. And that, if you can relieve a person's stress, then you can do a lot for them, you know, if you relieve the stress. And that's what it's all about, relieving the stress. And, of course, we still give out all the other things, the blankets and the hats and the gloves, you know, which we need gloves really bad right now. We've got some hats left, but we need gloves really bad. We need some winter clothing, some winter coats. But most of all, I know the economy keeps getting worse and worse because usually our donations go way down in the summertime, as do a lot of ministries, but our donations haven't popped back up to the level that they're normally at. And usually for November, because November is Thanksgiving month, people just don't have as much money to spend, so our donations are extremely low. In fact, while we have some turkeys and things, we don't have everything that we need for Thanksgiving. And even just our day-to-day running operations is clear down. And so I want you to, would you please pray about a donation tonight? You know, I have thousands of people that listen to this radio program. And I know I don't sell anything and I don't give you anything in return. Hopefully we give you a good program to listen to, one that you can talk about or that will challenge your thinking. That's what we want to do. I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I just want to challenge your thinking to where you will do research and look things up and figure it out for yourself and get yourself to talking about it. I pray that some way it leads you closer to the Father, to being saved, or maybe getting your loved one saved. But, you know, this is how we support the Wichita Mission Church and the poor. You know, we love to do it, but we don't sell anything. So the only way we have to get a donation is from you. And so I would ask that you would please pray about it. If you're not a praying person, just, you know, any kind of a donation will help. Small donation, large donation. But if everybody, if just, you know, a few percent, 10% of the people that listen to this radio program donated $100. There would be a lot of money to carry us through these holiday seasons because while our donations usually come up in November, they go down in December because of the economy, because people are buying presents for each other. And I don't have a problem with that. It's just that with this economy, what I have a problem with is the economy, which we all believe whose fault that is. But the problem is the economy's bad, and so we need your help. So really pray about it. You know, I know you don't like to hear begging, and if you're listening to this in a podcast or in the archives, you probably don't even hear this because you probably will. There's a part of the program where Pastor Dan begs, so I'll just fast forward it through that. Well, I'm praying that you don't fast forward it through it, that you will please pray about a donation for the Wichita Mission Church tonight, today, or whenever you hear that. Any kind of donation will help. If everybody donated $100, you can do it by mailing a check or money order. And that's why I'm asking so much this week, is because Thanksgiving's coming. You can mail us a check or a money order, and you can find our address at prophecyhour.com, at prophecyhour.com, or call me at 620-878-4682. And if you get the machine, just leave a message and say, hey, this is such and such. This is my number. I need your mailing address. And my wife or I will get back with you. But pray about it. You know, and I know that radio, so also ask that you tonight that you'd pray about supporting radio airtime. Airtime costs. And like I say, we don't sell anything. And so the ministry has to pay for radio airtime. And so I just pray that you might send a donation for radio airtime. Anyway, if you have somebody that you'd like to hear us interview, or somebody that's got a book out that you'd like for us to talk about or something, send me an email about it or call me and let me know, or send me that person's information and we'll check them out. But anyway, that phone number that you could call me would be 620-878-4682, 620-878-4682, and you can find all the information you need at prophecyhour.com. And I think that we have a link over there also to the Wichita Mission Church blog. I'm going to post over there about Thanksgiving. And on the Woman's Shelter Mercies blog, I'm also going to post over there, and on Prophecy Hour, how you can help for Thanksgiving. And if you live in the area, you know, if you make a pie or you want to make a turkey or something and drop it off, wow, that's always great, too, because you save my wife a lot of work. And I'm all for saving her work. Okay, anyway, now in the second half of the program, we're going to talk about some different things because he couldn't stay for the whole program, so I'm going to bring Frank on with me. And you all know Frank. You there with me, Frank?
I am.
You are. Well, how did you like Steven to start off with?
Well, good. Good.
Good guy?
I don't know if he's a good guy or if he's not a good guy, but the subject is something people need to pay attention to, because there's a lot of parallels in what went on and what is going on.
Right.
And every time, no matter where, now he focused on the Nazis, but it was the same anywhere it's ever happened. Every time guns are taken away, a slaughter begins shortly thereafter. And when I mean shortly, I mean, 10 years or so.
Right.
Within 10 years, people start dying wholesale.
Right. Yeah, it is a pretty amazing book, because it showed that, while one party tried to do it for a legitimate reason, then, when somebody else came to power. And, that's just like, and that's about laws. Somebody else comes to power, and so they took a law that was existing that was meant for a good reason and turned it into something bad. And I think that we've seen some, like in the originality, we see laws built about terrorists, but yet they're twisted then against, I've seen them twisted against into snooping on every American, into guns and so on and so forth. You know what I'm saying?
And that's nothing new. I mean, look at Trading with the Enemies Act, which was something they came up with for World War One, and it was, it was specifically for trading with enemies, declared enemies during wartime. And, if you're a nation at war, you can't have your citizens trading with the enemy, right?
Right.
They came up with the law, and it makes sense, and it's like, okay, I get that. You don't want people trading with the enemy, and they got to be, they got to be punished. But once World War One ended, and, Roosevelt then got it changed around to where the American people are declared the enemy. And you can go look it up, folks. Trading with the Enemies Act. Go check it out. You'll find your name in there. You're now an enemy. Everybody was declared an enemy when Roosevelt took the gold, because that was the money. And, it goes on and on. It's not a new thing. They've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you could go through lots of things. Most recently, the Patriot Act. There's so many aspects in there that they worded for terrorism but are used against the American people. It's just pitiful. I think that a leaner government just run with some simple common sense is better than all these laws, police state, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey,
anyway.
I've got something that I want to run by you.
Okay, go ahead.
Because you're talking about guns, and everybody knows about the Second Amendment. It's something that gets talked about a lot, and everybody knows, some people want more rules and stuff and infringements on the ownership of guns. Others want less, but everybody knows about it. There are infringements on the Second Amendment. Now, this is supposed to be our right.
Right.
It says it shall not be infringed, but they have taken it to say, a well-regulated militia, and they have switched the word regulated, which had a different meaning in its usage, regulated when the founders wrote it. And again, folks, you can look this up. The Federalist Papers are a great resource, but there's other stuff too, but that's the easiest place to find it. And well-regulated meant to them well-trained and well-armed. Okay, not lots of rules and limitations, because it also says shall not be infringed. Well, people go, it's safety and this and that and the other thing. Now, when you go to buy a gun here in Oregon, you've got to have a background check, which can take up to 20 days. It can be instant. It can take 20 days. It's whatever they get done. And you got to, give your name, show ID, all these things, right?
Right.
And some different guns, you want to get a concealed carry. Well, now you got to get fingerprinted, photographed. You got to get a special ID. You got to go to classes, on and on, right?
Right.
But this is a right. How can that be? Well, okay, we've accepted that. But now we go to voting. And Eric Holder tells us that just requiring somebody to show an ID is an infringement on your right to vote. Well, you know what? I think we should make the same rules, exactly the same rules, background check and everything. You want to register to vote? That's what you get. You get a background check, 20-day waiting period, the whole nine yards.
Well, you know, let's go with this.
Try to argue that, oh, that's an infringement. Oh, really? Wait a minute. There's this other right that it's okay to do that. That's not an infringement.
I get where you're going with that, but let's go with this. I don't know that that is so dangerous. Well, let's go with this. Let me say it in the right way. Well, before this recent election, I hadn't did that much research on illegal aliens voting. And then there was a lot of articles and there was a lot of research done on it. And actually, the election, the last presidential election could have very well been decided by the illegal voting, period.
Yeah, easily. There has to be, you know, they keep rolling out the number 12 million and 11 million. They've been doing that for 20 years. We all know anybody who doesn't have their head completely up their rectum knows there's got to be 20 to 25 million criminal aliens in this country,
sure,
and probably more.
Sure.
Now, if half of them vote, you're telling me that, what, 10 million illegal criminals voting isn't going to change an election? It will.
It will in this country, because I don't even think we had, did we have at least 50% of the voters turn out?
No.
No. So when you're not even having 50% of the electorate turn out, and you have that many illegal people voting, then it's going to dramatically sway.
This is why the Democrats are now, Nancy Pelosi has said that, oh, well, next time we got to get the vote out. We got to do this because we've got the magic, and we've got the magic is they're going to bring in lots of criminal aliens and allow them to vote. And the Republicans, this is the major thing. And you know what? I don't care if they care about me, or because I don't care about them. But they ought to care about their own survival. And if they want to survive, they might be flying high thinking, ho, 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 we're in charge. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Wait till all those criminal aliens that Obama's going to let in tomorrow, 5 million more, wait till they start voting. You know,
absolutely.
Your life is over as a politician. I'll tell every Republican that if they don't stop this.
Well, you know what? I think a large percentage of them do realize that. Anyway, I hope they do. But it's just a question of having enough guts to do something about it. Because, you know, they're always worried about the next election. And that's what, you know, doing research, that's what keeps popping up, that they won't impeach Obama because they're worried about what they will be thought about, you know, what will be thought about them in the next election and not getting a Republican in office.
You know what? I don't think they care what we think about them. What they care about is money. And these corporations want cheap labor. They want slave labor. They want people that can't complain because they're here illegally. They want people that will work for less because, you know, they live like rats all together in a box together, because they come from a third world country where that's normal. You know, and that's what they want, and that's where all these politicians get their money from. I'll tell you, there's too much money in elections, and there's too much outside money. Did you read the articles about, you know, we got these races in North Carolina and all over, and money's coming in from California, New York, and all. Wait a minute. Why are they giving money to somebody in another state who's running for a senator that's supposedly going to be representing the people of that state? Why would you do that? You wouldn't do that unless you were getting something in return. And it ain't right for a senator from North Carolina to be answering to people in California and New York. They got to fix this, and they're not going to, see, because it's the same reason we don't have a third and a fourth and a fifth and a sixth and a seventh party.
Right, absolutely.
And we should, because, you know, there's more than two opinions in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go with this. Did you happen to notice the article that they were talking about, they it was like, well, we just uncovered this, but most of the illegals that are coming in right now or for the last couple of years are not really Mexicans. Most of them are from South America or other parts of the world, and they don't want that revealed.
Say that again?
That most of the illegals that are coming across the border, our southern border right now, are not coming at, you know, they're not Mexican citizens, but rather they're citizens of countries in South America or other parts of the world.
I don't believe that.
Do what?
I don't believe that.
You don't believe that?
I don't believe it. No, I don't. I do not believe that. I think what this is their way of trying to divert attention away from Mexico. Because Mexico is the real problem, okay? Mexico is a criminal country. Okay, it's got two gangs vying for power. The ones that are called the legitimate government, but they're just as criminal as the drug cartels are. And see, people in America don't realize there are two Mexicans. There's the white Mexicans who rule Mexico, and then there's the Indian Spanish Mexicans, which are basically the uneducated third world slaves. You know, this is how Carlos Slim gets to be the most rich man in the world. I mean, look at him. Look at him. Look at the president of Mexico. Do they look like the Mexicans you see?
No.
No, they don't, because they're not. And they don't think they are either. And that's why they're getting rid of them.
Really?
Oh, Mexico is like... Yeah. Everybody here knows Latinos are as racist as any black person. And because, honestly... Maybe I'm wrong, but and maybe it varies from different parts of the country, but I have found that your average, everyday, down-the-street black person isn't all that racist.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they may like to hang out with, you know, their own people, just like everybody likes to hang out with their own people. But that doesn't mean you gotta that you necessarily hate everybody else. And I haven't found it to be that that's the majority of blacks. But... Mexicans, on the other hand, are very racist and very sexist.
Well, let me go with this. I want to make a comment about black people. You know, I all the time, you know, I run around in Wichita, I go run on errands, or the people that come into the mission, percent, you know, a large percent blacks, and I have some Mexicans and, you know, some Indians, white people. But, you know, I have a black person might open a door for me at a store or whatever. I just don't know. I don't see black racism in general. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't see it. I mean, I never get treated racially by any of them bad or people that don't. You know what I'm saying? And they're always seen courteous as anybody else or even more so courteous. You know what I mean? The Mexicans that I see, you know, most of the time they just look at me and don't talk, you know. That's kind of what I get from them. But, about the black folks, I think the racism that's supposed to be between black and white in this country is stirred up by the people, the powers that be, about money. They wouldn't have a job if the racism was cured.
Well, that's true. And you know, the Mexican racism isn't necessarily against... You know, the North American or North, you know, European whites here, their racism stems from Mexico, because there is a big racist divide between white Mexicans and dark Mexicans.
Right.
And the white Mexicans in Mexico are brutal, and they have everything. Okay, they take everything and leave nothing for everybody else.
The elite.
Right. And that's how Mexico is run. And the thing is, after, you know, a century of that or so, you can, you know, get some resentment towards anybody that looks even remotely like them.
Right.
And they are white. Now, they're Spanish white. Okay? You know, anybody who's seen anybody from Spain, they're not, you know... They don't look like the Mexicans you see down on the street, you know, the darker Mexicans. They just aren't. They're Spanish. And, you know, that's the same in Mexico. They've got a whole thing going on down there that never gets in the media. Never. You never hear about it. But it goes on nevertheless. And if
if
you get a chance to talk to somebody who came from Mexico, they'll tell you. They'll tell you. That's how I found out about it.
Well, that's how I'm going to find out about it, because we do have some, or so I treat everybody the same. I don't question them about who they are or what they are, you know what I mean, at the Mission Church. But there's a couple of fellows that I could talk to, and I'm going to talk to them about this subject, because that's interesting. I never really thought about that. It makes sense, and I believe you, but I just never talked about it.
There's no reason you would, like I said, because it just is something that is never, ever mentioned in the media. And it's like the guiding force behind, well, gee, why are all these Mexicans coming to America? That's why.
Yeah, it's not, it ain't for jobs. That's for sure.
Well, they get what they can get. I mean, if they can get jobs here, they'll take them. But, I mean, they're not going, well, I hear there's a lot of jobs up in America. It's like, no, we got to get out of here, man. We got to get out of here. That's why we need to go there. It's not so much. It's kind of like why everybody voted for Republicans. It wasn't so much because you wanted Republicans. It's just because you were sick of Democrats.
Sick of the Democrats, for sure. Yeah, and that's absolute. That's absolute. Well, we'll see what's going to happen. Well, thanks for being on with me, Frank.
I got
to go.
Dan.
And you're always appreciated. We'll talk to you later. And I'm going to tell the people goodbye. Anyway, bye-bye, Frank. Anyway. That was Frank. He does the Frank Report. It's Francis Stephan, or Frank Stephan. He does the Frank Report. You can find that on AVR. Tune in to it. He always has some wonderful things to say about different situations and people. But anyway, folks, again, pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. Thanksgiving's coming up. We can really use your help. But even beyond Thanksgiving, we can really use your help, period, because donations are just down just because of the economy. We have the same people been supporting us for years and years and years, but they just can't give as much because of this economy. And if you're part of the middle class, you know that most of you have lost about a third of your income. And so that's kind of the way it is. So pray about it. We don't have nothing to give you. We don't have nothing to sell you. We have a radio program that you can listen to. Of course, you listen to that free, but we have to pay our time. So pray about supporting our time. But remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. How can you not be a blessing to others if you consider yourself saved, or really if you are saved? If the Holy Spirit's working inside of you, don't suppress it. Let it out. Let the charitable part of you come out. Be kind to all others. Be a blessing to others. Visit them in a hospital. Visit them in jail. Whatever. Have a kind word for those who are down, and have a kind word for everybody. You know, kind words can really change somebody's day. Anyway, if not their life. We must remember there is only one God. That's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul. This is the first and great commandment. The second is like unto it. That shall love thy neighbor as thyself. Excuse me. Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses you and keeps you, and his face shines upon you and is gracious to you and gives you peace like no one or nothing else can. Stay tuned an hour from now. This is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the Internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.